Choose your next words carefully, Leonidas. They may be your last.
Madman. You're a madman. Blasphemy. This is madness.
This is Sparta!
Who do we have left? Britney Spears. Cam Kardashian. Paris Hilton. Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global.
I mean, the lines are blowing up.
Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E.
Oh, look at you!
All right, honey, buddy, I'll be right with you. I'm a good guy. If you attack us, I attack you. Here, hello, my name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Point is powerful. This is a no-win situation. Give me a call in about an hour and a half. You know what I mean? I survived it, and at the end of it.
Hammer 96.7, along with the number one co-host, Ellen J. Today's my good friend, and I'm honored to call him my good friend, Morale. There's no secret how I feel about this man. I think he's a genius. This guy has a heart that I think everybody in the world can just jump into, and it's comforting. He's a very wise guy, but he's a very smart guy. But most importantly, he's my friend. I want to introduce my friend, the genius, now author. I didn't know that, Ellen. Who knew what was going on with his secrets and his talents? Who knew?
Yep, who knew?
Who knew? Well, I want to introduce you to my friend, and you're going to enjoy him too, Mr. Morali. Welcome to the studio, my friend. Yeah, there he is.
So, then I'm honored to be on your show.
Oh, it's an honor to have you, my friend. It's good to hear your voice. It's been such a long time.
Thank you. Thank you. It's me too. I'm happy to be on the show with you and Ellen.
Well, you're today. More than welcome. Thank you. Because, you know, I call you my friend. And I really am honored to even call you my friend. Morali, I know you're a genius, and it's hard to interview a friend because we talked before, so I have to pretend we never talked before. And I'm looking at your background. Would you tell people a little bit about your background before we begin?
Yeah, sure. You know, I was born in a small village in a corner of India, and I was brought up in a lower middle class family. My father was a small time farmer, tilling little land and bringing up his six children. I was a third child, one of three sons, and I had three sisters. I was educated in that small village, school final, and after which I joined a diploma in electrical engineering. Then I took employment. I improved my qualifications studying in the evening school, and slowly I rose in my position, and then I shifted to software development and joined Tata Consultancy Services. I worked in manufacturing initially for about 15 years, and then shifted to information technology and software development and worked in it for about another 15 years. Then I started my own consultancy, Chemuturi Consultants, and I worked on quite a few projects as a freelancer. I was offering help to the organizations in project management, quality assurance, and process definition and development, and also helping them, hand-holding organizations in the certification of ISO and capability maturity model integration, and I have been conducting training programs. I offered consultancy to organizations in India predominantly, and a few organizations in the United States too. I shifted to United States in 2018, December. I've been living henceforth in this great country with my elder son, Dr. Nagendra, who is a pharmaceutical scientist in a U.S. company. And I had two sons. Both are in USA. And my wife and I live here in USA. And I wrote in 2008, beginning, I wanted to record all the knowledge I gained in information technology by working there for the last 30 years. And I began with the software estimation book, followed by a book on software project management, and which was followed by a book on software quality assurance, then a book on management of IT projects, a book on requirements engineering and management. Then I wrote a book, comprehensive book on software design, which I proudly claim to be the first of its kind, because there is no comprehensive treatment of software design in any other book except tips and tricks or report design and screen design kind of things. This is the most comprehensive work. And then after coming at the end, I wrote the most fundamental book in information technology, How to Write Programs. I should have written it first perhaps, but I thought at this point There is no such book which is not tied to a language and which starts with the writing a program, printing Hello World. So I gave it a comprehensive treatment and published that book. Then I wrote a couple of books on management in general, because the management definition itself has changed. Way back in the 70s when Peter Drucker and others have, Phil Cosby and others have written books, it was management was taken as getting things done, the art and science of getting things done. But now with outsourcing, the getting things part has changed. We just outsource. So the manager today, what is he doing? He's getting results. The management is the art and science of getting the desired results. And with this change, a lot of functions have changed. So I wrote a new book, a management, a new paradigm for the 21st century, and which I followed with another book on people management. So far, the books are on personal management, treating personal as a resource. And now it has changed. The people have to be managed. The aspect of the daily, day-to-day aspects of managing people is allocating work, deallocating work. This is no more mass production scenarios as depicted in the Charlie Chaplin's film Modern Times. There's no, every day he goes and does his work. No, that's not the way. Every day the work changes. So that's another book that I wrote. All these are published in the United States. And then the Hinduism, let's not call it real Hinduism, they're Indian. When the books were written, there is no Hindu, no Christian, no Judaism, no Islam. There was universally, there was a righteousness, that's all. And there very wise things were written in the Sanskrit editions 5,000 years ago. And the world is losing them. So in my own small way, I started translating some of those epics. They were all epics. They were all poems. So that they could be sung and preserved. They were preserved from mouth to mouth, passed down generation to generation. And printing started printing. Now, once the printing started, the passing on the epics from mouth to mouth simply discontinued. We are losing those books now. So I translated basically three books. One is Ramayana, on which you have interviewed me some time back. And the second is Bhagavad Gita, which is taken as the book for Hinduism, but it's not true. It's not the book of Hinduism. I translated that too. And then this Garuda Purana. This is the only book that I have come across in any language that deals with the topic of death to birth. All books begin with the birth or in the middle of the birth and they go till the end of the birth, death. But this book, the first chapter itself starts with the death and what happens later, and the ending is with the birth. So I thought this is unique in the world and I should make it available to the all the people in the on the earth, and the best language is English. So, and I have expertise in English. I do not have expertise in French, German, or Spanish. So I translated that into English. In fact, there were originally 10,000 slokas or couplets that were having this Garuda Purana, but now we don't have them. We do not. They are not available. All 10,000 are not available. We get only 3,000 or 4,000, and that is what I took and translated. Even in this small book, I see lot of wisdom which is not available anywhere. That is why I translated this. So I can talk on this book, Brian and Ellen, but if you prefer to ask a question that I answer, I will stop here.
Okay. Well, it's very interesting because there's a couple of questions I do want to mention. You translated this book of language 5,000 years ago. What kind of language was 5,000 years? Was it still English 5,000 years ago?
No. 5,000 years ago, the language was Sanskrit. And the Sanskrit language was eternal. And there is a book that is available, that is Ramayana, that was written 800,000 years ago in Sanskrit. And this Sanskrit language, though is not spoken in day-to-day life, is still available and living. It is living in India, it is living in Europe, it is living in USA too. There are certain language universities which teach Sanskrit.
Interesting, very interesting. Well, tell me, I mean, you just amaze me, you know, Mavali. You're just impressing me. But tell me what the book is about, my friend. Well, you already did, in a way. You already did, but if there's something else that you didn't speak upon, somebody buying your book and they see that title, Death, you know, and what is it, Death to Birth? Matters of Death to Birth. So they see that title, they see you, they see you at the table because you're on a book tour. They're going to say to you, and you have 30 seconds, tell me what your book is about.
This book is unique because it deals with matters from death to birth, not from birth to death. This is the only book in the world, to the best of my knowledge and belief, that deals with this topic. Who knows what happens after death? It is a dark thing. We do not know. And where do we go? You know, the religions, the dominant religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, they say there is one life. After the life, you are buried, interred in the earth, waiting for the day of judgment to be judged on your actions, and they are consigned either to the heaven where you eternally enjoy life or consigned to hell where you eternally burn. Is this true? Can this happen? If this is eternally enjoying in the heaven, at least there are now 7.5 billion of people on earth. And how that heaven or hell should be to keep them eternally enjoying and eternally burning. So this is the one book which tells us the real theory behind birth-rebirth cycle. And when will this end? So if you want to know this ancient wisdom, buy this book.
I like your style. Now, you know, it's an interesting style. I mean, interesting book, because you have death first, death to birth, instead of birth to death.
Yes.
Is there a reason why you put death first instead of birth to death?
Really, the reason is the book itself, the original book itself, it starts with the birth. The first chapter starts with the how the life goes out of a human being or any life form. See, Bhayan, what is the ending of life? If you medically speak, the stopping of heart marks the death. Now, the brain stops functioning, still the heart is beating and lungs are functioning, the body continues. Brain death is not death. If lungs die, within 4 minutes or 5 minutes, the heart stops because the oxygen supply is cut off. But if the heart dies, both lungs and the brain immediately die. So the stopping of the heart is the real event of death. Now, what makes the heart stop? Or, on the other hand, we can ask, when the baby was in the womb of the mother, what makes the heart begin ticking? We really have no answers. It is nature. The science says it is nature. The nature triggers the heart to start ticking in the womb when the baby is, say, 8 weeks or 10 weeks or 12 weeks, whatever, I'm not sure about it. And then it stops one day. The doctors keep pumping oxygen through ventilators, and still the heart stops. What makes it stop? When the life goes away and the life is there, it is just a second or fraction of a second. The body is active, the blood is warm, the bacteria inside the body is kept in control. The next second, next fraction of a second, the life ebbs out, the heart stops pumping, and the bacteria becomes active, and they start eating the body, and within 3-4 hours, foul smell comes and all this. What is that part that goes out of this body? We can't see it. We don't know what makes it tick, what makes it stop. And this is called as life. Generally, we refer to it as life. The life began and the life went out. And the book starts with this aspect. What is happening at this point? You know what the book says? Shall it go on? Brian?
Yes, I'm listening. I'm fascinated.
Okay.
I'm listening to you. It's almost like I'm out of my body and listening to my own show because you're fascinating. I'm not going to talk. This is
Thank you.
You sound really good.
See,
okay.
When the life is about to go,
right,
the book says the whole life flashes in front of his eyes. His
right.
whole life. He is the spectator. Things, events are happening in front of the eyes. The whole life flashes before his eyes, very own eyes. Within a few seconds, he can see all the events. He is fully aware of why, say, a particular event has happened, what happened. What happened behind his back also is brought to him. He knows everything now, and his voice is shut off. He cannot talk to anybody. His voice is shut off. He realizes everything in his life. He knows now everything that has to know. Events behind the events, the reasons behind the event, the people behind the events, everything comes to his knowledge, but he will not be able to speak. And then, when the life goes out, he will suffer the pain of 100 scorpions biting him.
Wow. Well,
and
that's it. I'm not going to die. That's it. I'm done. I'm going to stay on this earth forever, Morali. I'm not having that. But
pain of 100 scorpions biting happens to sinners, 100% sinners.
Really?
And Brian, we are all not 100% sinners. We have done some noble deeds, most of us, 99% of us, leaving that 1% exceptions. 99%
right.
of us have done some noble deeds, committed some sins. We are somewhere in between on the scale of the continuum 1 to 10. Maybe we are at 5, maybe we are at 3, or maybe we are at 8 on the scale of virtuosity. So we do not suffer all that. If you are completely virtuous, there will be no pain. Life will simply go away.
But there's two questions here, and we're going to get to the other questions. First of all, when people talk about when they're near death, they're talking about they're getting flashbacks, and like you said, your whole life passes before you. Why does that only happen when you're near death? Why can't your life pass before you when you're just meditating or going shopping? Why does it have to happen? Why does it have to happen near death? Are you taking memories?
No, really,
are you saying goodbye?
You asked a very good question. I think I should have told that myself. The life does flash, the whole life does flash before the eyes of the person who has committed number of sins and not repented them. See, when we committed an action, the life definitely comes back to us and reminds us about the event and say, you have done this wrong, or you have done this right. You had put in a creditable performance there. You acted poorly. You had been a rat. You had been a noble soul. We get that flashes very frequently. The whole life doesn't flash, but events do flash. For good people like you and me, I'm taking that liberty to put you and me in the good people list.
Well, thank
life
you, but it's more you. It's more you. I need a reference to get in. It's more you. Go ahead. You're so kind. Go ahead.
So the life flashes us, and we keep on reflecting on the past events, and then, if possible, we go back and correct. You go back and apologize. I know you have done that kind of apologizing in the past.
Yes.
And I have done that apologizing in the past. So we are reflecting. The life is flashing before us and telling us, hey, Murali, you have done this despicable thing. Go back and apologize. We go back and apologize. Then that event is cleaned. It will not flash before you. That flashing before you happens only for those people who have done things but did not compensate for it, did not clear that action. So the real life keeps flashing. You know, the theory of Hinduism in Bhagavad Gita, there is a shloka. I have translated that book also to English, American English, and it's available. The God tells, the question is asked of the God, okay, God, you are there, but how do I find you in this world, on the earth? And the God has given number of places where the God can be seen. And he told, in every human being, I am in the mind. You know, Brian, there are two things. Brain and mind. Brain is the flesh, the mass of flesh that is there inside our head. Mind is the capability, thinking capability, the memory, the intelligence. Everything is in the mind. He said, I am in your mind. The God is in our mind. And the mind keeps us telling. Mind is the biggest tormentor of the people. No, outside force can torment as much as one's brain can torment. It tells us you did the wrong, go back and apologize or do something. And some of us do not pay heed to that inner voice. So those who did not pay, the whole life flashes before him. But for those people like you and me who are average, those things which we have not performed the repentance or compensated or did something, that much portion flashes.
Interesting. Morali, how many gods are there? Are there one God? I mean, Buddha, we're going Hindu, we're going Judaism, we're going Christianity, we're going all over the place. Is there only one God?
Brian, you asked a question that is very close to my heart. You know, you may not believe, there is a website called freethoughtnation.com. It was run by an American lady by name D.M. Murdoch, and she wrote quite a few very interesting books. She labels herself as an atheist, and she died a couple of years back due to breast cancer. And I put an article on that website. She has taken half a dozen of my articles and published them on her website. One is on this topic of God. The general opinion is that Hinduism has multiple gods, 3,300 million gods, something like that. But the fact is not that. In those people who see all the temples dedicated to so many gods, they think that each is a separate god. The real shloka in Sanskrit is Ekam Sat Vipra Bahudha Vadanti. That is, the truth is one, the God is one, but the knowledgeable say it in many ways. And, you know, the article that I wrote is the concept of God as energy. You know, there is in this very book, I take a name of Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu is the sustainer of the world. The creation, the concept of creation in Hinduism, you know, there is something written that has understood from behind, from within. There is an internal meaning, and externally it is humanized. Everything is called as human beings. And the creation is the originally the creation happened because the egg of universe exploded with the sound of womb. The egg of universe exploded with the sound of womb, and from that was born Adi Parashakti. That is in Sanskrit word. When you translate it, Adi means first, Para means the supreme, Shakti means energy. You translate it into English, the firstborn was, the first supreme energy was born. And that is what our Big Bang theory says. And from that, three energies were born. One, the creative energy. And two, the sustenance energy. And three, destructive energy. The creative energy is called as Brahma. The sustenance energy is called as Vishnu. The destructive energy is called as Shiva. And the consort, the three had three consorts. The consort of creativity is Saraswati, wisdom. Creation mm-hmm. has the concept of wisdom. Sustenance mm-hmm. has the concept of wealth, Lakshmi. And the destructive energy has the concept of Parvati or power.
Mm.
So, at the conceptual level or the precept level, their energies. At the practicing level, they take it as gods. See, God is just a name, a code. Shakespeare mm-hmm. has said, what's in a name? A rose smells just as sweet, called by any name. So the
Go ahead.
The precept right. and the practice, there is a large mm-hmm. gap. The people are at various intellectual levels. Brian, maybe thinking that I am, flattering you, but how many people are there in the USA that have the same intellectual capability as you are?
Oh, nobody. I'm the only idiot.
The person who has the wisdom to call himself an idiot, I consider him to be a genius, Brian.
He's an idiot savant.
See, how many people have the capability, courage, and the bravery to call himself an idiot?
A wise man who not many. It's a wise man who don't want to be held accountable. I don't know.
So, for the people, the precept level, concept level, like you and me, we can understand that God is nothing but an energy. I wrote
right.
this article on that, and 100,000 people have read it so far, and some of them have become my friends, my fans,
mm-hmm.
because of that
mm-hmm.
article. See, what is God? God is omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. All knowledgeable, all knowing, all powerful, and everywhere. And energy is that which is present everywhere in the universe. It is all knowledgeable and it is all powerful. And scientists call it as energy and we call it as God.
But
if we replace the word God by energy, will scientists accept?
I believe your theory. I like your theory. I do believe in it. But it's a dangerous theory in Christianity, because if we believe in a Big Bang theory, which I do, and we believe God is energy and many types of God, here's what's dangerous, because you just said the Bible was just a story. Because if you believe in a Big Bang theory, you do not believe in a story of Jesus and Mary and Joseph and the Bible and the Christianity. Would you like to explain that? Do you actually believe in the Bible as it's written, as Christians are reading?
Bible is a good book, certainly. Whether it is
mm-hmm.
written by God or not, God knows. Only God knows. Whether similarly, this Garuda Purana, what I have translated,
mm-hmm.
it certainly is not written by God. It is written by a man.
Mm-hmm.
It is
mm-hmm.
written by a man. And he reported a conversation between Lord Vishnu and his supposed carrier, a transport vehicle, Garuda.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that comes here, how can a man hear the conversation that took place somewhere in the universe or outside the universe and report it here? Now, here comes the interesting part.
Uh-huh.
When we use the language is composed of alphabet, letters, each letter. The English word is a letter. And it's an alphabet, A, B, C, like that, 26 letters.
Mm-hmm.
In Sanskrit, the word for this letter is akshara. Akshara means the one that never decays. You know why the word that the letter doesn't decay? I am speaking, you are speaking, this speaking,
mm-hmm.
these words,
mm-hmm.
where are they going? They are being converted into waves. And these waves are traveling. What happens to this wave? It keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. The voice, the pitch comes down steadily, steadily, steadily. And the voice may not be audible to us. And our capacity to listen itself is limited. Below a certain frequency, we cannot hear it. animals can hear it. Yeah, after some frequency, the animals also may not be able to listen to it, but the wave that has once been generated, the ripple continues to travel. And by a freakness of nature, if somebody can listen to that slow frequency, low pitch sounds, he certainly can hear it. And we are seeing extrasensory perception is a fact. We have recorded, scientists have recorded some cases. So that is how this extrasensory perception has been used by this particular person who heard that conversation and wrote it. All our conversations are recorded and are available in the universe. Only thing is how to retrieve them. So when we come to Bible and say the God has created the universe in 7 days, it is the perception given to the author that this is so. And the Christianity doesn't stand only on this. The Christianity stands on the principle of Jesus propagating a religion. And before Jesus, there was some religion. And Jesus never lived as a Christian. He was a Jew. He died as a Jew. He never converted. His apostles, his disciples, they went and propagated his philosophy and started a religion. And this was very well brought out by that lady, D.M. Murdoch, in her theory, The Christ Conspiracy, The Best Story Ever Sold, something like that, her title was there. She brought it very well. So you can still be a Christian. You don't have to convert your religion. When you say, what is in a name, if you can accept what is in a name, and then if we accept there are many prophets, Jesus is not the only one. There are other prophets at other places, at other regions. Then, you know, you can get out of this narrow-mindedness. Of course, the organized religion wants the dogma to be there because they pay money and they can sustain their organization. They can pay the salaries to their employees. It is so with every organized religion.
You know, I want to get my questions in. I can listen to you forever, Mo Ali. You know that. And you and I will have tea. And you would talk, and I'll get us chicks. I'll trade off that way. Oh, you're a married man. Oh, wait a minute. Did you get remarried, Morale? Because if you did, I want to say congratulations, because you and I are friends. We know the first wife was not so good. So did you remarry somebody and you're happy?
Marry somebody, and marriage is a union between two bodies to begin with. And it has to grow into the union between the souls. Okay? Will that grow? It doesn't grow. You know, God has set certain rules. You know, interestingly, go to Islam, go to Christianity, go to Judaism, go to Hinduism, go to Buddhism. Any religion you go, they set the roles of husband and wife. And the roles are almost similar in all these religions. Husband as the provider, wife as the caretaker. Now, if these roles are not accepted, conflict is going to come.
Right.
And when conflict steps in, you know, a lot of things happen.
I do know that. I'm going to get to these questions really quickly because I'm looking at the time. I'm going to ask you another question. Is it credible to say that rebirth is certain?
Yeah. You know, you go to Wikipedia and type rebirth. You will find really many instances. One thing that the scientists and normal folk that cannot accept is a human being who dies as a human being, will he be born as a human being again? A dog that died, will it be born as a dog again? No. These births are only for this birth. It depends on what kind of actions you have performed in this birth that define your next birth. In this birth, if I am a human being, I may go back in life and be born as a dog or even as a bacteria in the sea or a tree. The tree is also life. The rebirth can be a trajectory, in which case you will never know. Very rare events, human being is reborn as a human being, and that he remembers, that are recorded. Those recorded cases are there. Anybody can refer Wikipedia and get to know these details, and they are being, scientific research is conducted, and they recorded certain rebirths. So rebirth is credible.
I want to remind everybody that we're talking to the great. You're more than a tech guru. I'm going to call you as a spiritual advisor. I think you have some insight here. I'm going to promote you today. But we're talking to the great Murali Shimatori. Shimatori?
Yes, you got it right.
Thank you. And the name of the book is From Death to Birth. Is it on sale now on Amazon?
It's available on Amazon, Lulu. Mm-hmm. I published it on Lulu, lulu.com. Lulu.com is the best place to buy.
Mm-hmm.
It's available on Amazon too.
Excellent. We're going to get some more questions because I'm looking at the time.
Yeah.
Does your book involve religion?
I did not get the question.
Okay. The question is, that, you know, does this involve religion? I know we're talking about certain types of religion. For instance,
religion, no.
Right.
There is no religion. See, there are certain chapters in this which talk of the rituals to be performed. That is, ritualistic part of the religion is there. But there are many chapters. Predominantly, this book talks about what happens. And that there is no connection to religion. Whoever dies, the same thing. You know, sometime back I had a discussion with a Christian priest in Switzerland. He said, you say your God is there everywhere, then the shit is also part of everywhere. Do you mean to say your God is in shit? I answered him this way. See, do you have a Hindu God and a Christian God and a Muslim God and a Buddhist God sitting out there looking after their own people? Or do you believe there is one God for everybody? And do you believe that God is only in certain places and certain places are shunned by him? He agreed.
Wow. Well, let's get to the next question. I'm seeing it because I only have 17 minutes. And I know there's a lot of people want to ask you some questions, Murali.
Yes,
we're going to have you back.
Please.
You know this. We cannot do this in an hour. This show needs to go for like three hours. But I want to get your important question in. What is written in the book? What is written in the book, Murali? What is written?
The book that writes all the events that started the death, how the life goes out of the body, and where does it go? For virtuous people, for sinners. And there are four paths out of this, and out of four paths, one path is for sinners, and three paths are for virtuous people, depending on the amount of virtue, amount of sin. And then what happens, so how the judgment is done, and after the judgment, how, where they go back. They are put back on earth. You know, Brian, the burning hell, should you want to search outside the earth? Is it not there in Sahara Desert, in the middle of the Sahara Desert? You are born as a snake or a lizard. Are you not burning the entire day?
Good
and
question.
Freezing hell, the same Sahara Desert, after freezing in the night, it is freezing. If you are born there, that is consigned to hell. Heaven, there are countries like Switzerland, there are certain countries like United States of America, where you are born, you are in heaven.
Interesting. I cannot answer that. Yeah, I'm going to have to get you drunk so I can get you to my level. I cannot answer that. I can't. Well, are you saying that wherever you're born or conceived is I don't even know how to answer that question. Is could be heaven and hell? Is that what you're saying, or am I missing something?
Heaven and hell are nothing but they are concepts, and the hell is where you're suffering on earth itself.
Right. That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
You are too smart. Hey, I figured it out, though. I figured it out. And tell me, if we had this conversation when I asked you, are there many gods? And I'm going to say this, if there are many gods and many religions and many worship, are there many evil entities and devils and antichrists too?
This antichrist is again a concept. You know, anti-Hinduism is also a concept. That religion that teaches other than this way of life is anti to this. There are many antichrists, there are many anti-Hindu, there are anti-Islam people, and there are, if we do not agree to the other person's point of view, we call him anti. Anti is opposite our view. You know, there is an American way of life and there is an Islamic way of life. And when these two meet, if we can adjust, great. If we cannot adjust, we start fighting with each other and cutting each other's throats.
Right. Right.
So what is to be practiced? Is there one religion that is the best and all or worst? The religion is specific to its place. The dogma of Islam is specific to Saudi Arabia in 7th century. Christianity is local to Europe in the 3rd, 4th century. And we have to progressively correct this and apply that. And if correction is applied, we remain dogmatic and fighting at each other. Now, you know, let me take this liberty to say Christianity has matured. Hinduism has matured. Islam, unfortunately, is yet to mature. If it matures, one day it matures. It has matured in Saudi Arabia, maturing. And I'm sure the world also, it will slowly mature.
Brian?
I'm here. Sorry, I'm here. I was wondering if the Big Bang Theory is basically science, and how does science and religion coexist with each other?
See, Hinduism believes in Big Bang Theory, and that mm-hmm. is the sound of explosion is Om. We have mm-hmm. a single letter worship mantra that is Om, and believe that sound emanated from the Big Bang. So Hinduism is coexistence with science. We keep saying all concepts of Hinduism are being proven. Now, you know, mm-hmm. in Hinduism in India, we never say shake hands. We only say namaste and fold our, join our palms and show to the other person. Now, coronavirus mm-hmm. made the whole world adopt that practice.
I got to ask you one more last question. We're going to open up the phones. Who are the dramatists or the persona in the book?
The dramatist persona are basically two. One is Lord Vishnu, the sustaining energy of the world, and Garuda or Garutmanta is supposed to be a hawk, eagle kind of bird that carries Vishnu to all the places that he wants his servant. The conversation between these two people is recorded, and they're the main persona, dramatist persona. They're the two people in this book.
And again, we're talking to the great Murali Cimitrui. That's Cemutri, the name of the book. It's called Death. I'm sorry. The Matters of Death to Birth. The Matters of Death to Birth. You can get it on Lulu.com, my friend?
Yes, it's in Lulu.com, LULU.com, and Amazon.com.
We're going to open up the phones right now because I'm thinking a lot of people want to ask you a lot of questions. And we have the lovely Laverne here, just the lovely lady. Good morning, Laverne. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning
to all. Brian, I picked the wrong day to clean my refrigerator out because I was listening, but you know, you hear bits and pieces of it, but
sure.
it was a very, very interesting and informative conversation. So I will go back and listen to the show.
Thank you.
I'm sure I would have had a lot of questions if I had sat down and listened it all the way through.
Oh, I'm just glad to see your name. And I know when you listen to it, because you were once a Christian and you had so many questions about Christianity, and you did question Christianity. And when we're talking about the book, we start from death to birth. You're going to say, I want to ask some questions. And when you do, I'm going to make sure I can give you Morale's Facebook, because I got a feeling that you're going, and if he accepts your friendship, I'm sure he will. He's a great man. He's a loving man. Morale, would you be kind enough to accept Laverne's friendship?
Definitely. Certainly. Absolutely. I will do that. It will be a pleasure of mine to accept your friend of as my friend. I'll be proud to say that.
Well, thank you.
You.
Thank you.
Brian,
because
you asked questions. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Laverne.
The part of the discussion that I did hear, you asked the questions, and I said, that's a question I can ask. That's a question I can ask. You asked them all.
Well, I'm channeling your spirit. I'm channeling what would Laverne say. Thank you, Laverne. Thank you so much.
Laverne was inside him.
She was. I channeled the Laverne spirit. Thank you so much. We're going to go to King. King, you were listening, and what do you think, King? Thousands of gods, King. You're a Christian.
Hey,
what do you think?
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning,
Brian.
My brother.
Good morning, Laverne.
Good morning,
just
King.
Listening, you know what I mean? I'm very impressed with what he was talking about. I mean, I've been in church all my life, and I know there's a time or two where I was in my younger days, I was out there running wild, and I would have to say that I've had it where, you know, life flashed in front of me, you know, death flashed in front of me and all that. So I can definitely relate, you know. There's a time out here in Phoenix, Arizona, where I think there was one time now, don't take it offensive or whatever, but I'm just being honest. Like, there's a time out here in Arizona where I forgot where I was at, but I know I was in Phoenix, and I think I was high off of coke or something. And I think I, like, passed out on a sidewalk, and I think I lost my pulse or something, you know what I mean? And, you know, like I said, I believe I seen God, you know what I mean? I already know it. It's real. It happens, you know what I mean? So it's very real. When he said death comes before life, I mean, you know. So very touching story, though.
Thank you, King. Thank you.
Well,
and we're going to go to Tata. Oh, Morale dropped. I hope he comes back.
Uh-oh.
We're going to go to Tata.
Wow.
Yeah, he'll be back. I'm going to go to Tata. Here we go. Melinda, what? Thank you, Tata.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good morning. How are you? Huh?
Beautiful flower?
It means beautiful flower.
Ah, okay.
Melinda, what?
Anyway, I feel like, reincarnation is definitely real. There are actually, like, chapters from the Bible that were, like, hidden or buried or, like, deleted by, like, certain, what do you call them, like, popes and, like, leaders, you know, they hid, the Bible has been revised. I'm not sure how many times it's been revised, but it's definitely been revised. You know how Jesus, said, you know, referred to John as Elijah. Who has speakerphone on?
Morale.
Oh,
Morale's back. There you go.
Yeah, I got back. Somehow got cut off. I could reach out from another phone.
Thank you, Morale. Morale's back. Thank God. Okay.
Thank God.
But But, Tata, it's like I know you're a spiritual person, and let me ask Morali, do you believe in a third eye?
Third eye, yes, Brian. I do believe in third eye, and everybody has the third eye, but most people fail to open the third eye. Third eye is the one which is between your eyebrows, and it is also called as pineal gland or something like that. And that opens only when you can perceive things without seeing. As you practice this life and really examine, analyze your things and the events with a dispassionate precision, your third eye opens and you will be able to see things which others cannot see and which you yourself have not seen. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
I'm listening.
Yeah.
Oh, that must be me.
So the third eye is there. Only thing is we have to open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See,
I'm sorry.
Then as I told a few minutes ago, the God is in your mind. If God is in your mind, what is it that you cannot see unless we put a big screen in front of our Brian and start from looking at things by putting it to cold logic and scientific method. Sometimes I have to talk about science for a few minutes, right? This is not the time, but I do believe, and I could open. I'm sure you can also open. You have opened already, but only thing you do not realize you're using your third eye.
I think, Ellen, I think you need to call back in because I'm getting feedback. Kiddo, I think it's your phone. Hold on. Morali, hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
Okay. Ellen, let's see. Test. Yes, it's Ellen's phone. Okay. Well, you have enlightened
Morali.
Me.
Morali's phone.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I muted Morali.
Don't go ahead. It's okay.
I'm here.
So, Ta-Ta-Ta, do you want to ask Morali anything spiritual that you might want to talk about, like the third eye or angels or guardian angels?
Yeah. First, I want to comment that, like, reincarnation has been, like, mentioned in the hidden chapters that the popes and leaders deleted. So, like, reincarnation, it was actually part of Christianity before. And I want to ask Morali, like, you know how Hinduism has nirvana and Buddhism has enlightenment? How are the two related?
Okay. There you go, my friend. Did you hear that question?
That thing that she meant, like, Mr. Names, I could not really understand. What are the names that two are related?
Go ahead, Ta-Ta-Ta. Which one?
She said they are related. Yeah, please.
The Hindu nirvana versus Buddhism enlightenment.
Nirvana is getting out of the cycle, birth, rebirth, birth. Getting out of the cycle, and you would never return back to the earth or to life again. Enlightenment is you are now having the information which cannot be proven but which you know to be true about the entire world, the life cycle, birth, rebirth cycle, and you have the knowledge. You are given the knowledge, and enlightenment leads to nirvana. Nirvana is out. You will get out of the cycle of birth and rebirth. Enlightenment is the knowledge that allows you, that gives you the path, gives you the tools to reach that nirvana. Did they answer your question?
Okay. I know Buddha, like, reached nirvana, right?
Buddha is a Hindu. He was born in India. He was born to a Hindu king. He professed only Hinduism, even though the Buddhists were predominantly in China, do not accept. And Buddhism's books were written in Sanskrit. Mahayana, Dhammapada, and all that written in Sanskrit. Nirvana is the Nirvana was a Hindu term. It is a Sanskrit term. It was Hinduism. And the Buddhists have taken this as their thing. You know, one thing, Brian and Helen and the ma'am who are on the line, I can tell you with confidence that Islam is one part of Hinduism. It is called Kshatriya Dharma in Hinduism. It is 100% same as Islam. Islam is no different from the Kshatriya Dharma of Hinduism. Hinduism has four dharmas, and one is Islam. 100%. Everything that is there in Islam is this. There is nothing, they have anything addition to this.
It's not even enough time. We just scratched the surface, Murali. I got to invite you into part two. I got to invite you into part two. Would you mind coming back for part two and we can go a little further with the discussion?
Sure, Brian. It will be my pleasure. I'll definitely be there once again on your show anytime. Just give me a couple of weeks' notice and I'll come back and definitely talk. I enjoyed your show earlier and today I enjoyed much more. Thank you.
Oh, well, you know, you're my good friend, and thank you so much. In fact, we have another show coming up right now, and there's a lady who's coming on, and she claims she's a prophet, and she talks to entities, so that should be interesting. Murali, I cannot love you enough, man, and thank you so much. You honored us for coming into the studio. And once again, can you tell people how to reach you? The name of the book, everybody, wait before you do, it's called, the name of the book, it's called The Matters of Death to Birth. And the author is Murali Cimatori. That's Cimutri. You can get the book now on Lulu, and it's also on Amazon. And Mr. Murali, could you tell us where people can reach you?
You can reach my web. I am extensively on the internet. If you just type Murali Cimatori, 30 pages come. I have a website, murali.cimatori.com. You can go there. I am on LinkedIn. I am Facebook. Please feel free to make a contact, and I accept all contacts. Never denied any contact. And I'll be glad to engage in conversations, answer questions, whatever. Please feel free to reach me. Our simple email ID is cmkusa@gmail.com. That is cmkusa.
Thank you, my friend. And we're going to have a part two because this is just too good. Thank you again, my friend. And we're going to see everybody in about 2 minutes. And we have a prophet coming in, and she's going to talk about entities, and she speaks on their behalf, so it should be an interesting show. Assalamu alaikum, my friend. Oh, no. Assalamu alaikum, my Murali.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you,
sir. All right, everybody, we'll see you in... Thank you. It's a blessing to talk to you. We'll see you guys in 2 minutes.
Bye.
Peace with you. Bye.